Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Demonstrations erupted on the streets of Caracas, Venezuela on Tuesday. Opposition leader Juan Guaido called for the military to abandon President Nicolás Maduro and for people to rise up in a video he posted to social media.
I call on you to mobilize. I call on you to take to the streets of Venezuela. The final phase of this transition begins today.
Protesters supporting both Maduro and Guaido clashed in the streets. Reports say dozens of people were injured. By mid-afternoon, the government had pulled both CNN and the BBC off the air in the country. And by the end of the day,
máxima serenidad, calma y cordura.
Maduro was still in power and gave a televised speech saying that Guaido and what he called the coup-mongering far right failed. This episode is just the latest eruption in the country's political and economic crisis. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Back in January, Juan Guaido, the relatively unknown leader of the country's National Assembly, declared himself the, quote, legitimate president of Venezuela, demanding an end to Maduro's presidency. The U.S. government has been in full support of Guaido ever since. Here's National Security Advisor John Bolton speaking Tuesday to members of the media.
We're providing support in a variety of respects. Certainly, we have done everything we can to get humanitarian assistance into the country. We're doing a lot of other things, some of which I'm not going to talk about. And we're certainly working with the Lima Group, the Organization of American States, the over 50 countries that support Guaido's legitimacy democratically.
But U.S. involvement has many worried about who would benefit if Maduro is forced out. Reports show Guaido plans to broaden the role private foreign oil companies can take with Venezuela's oil. And while U.S. officials often talk about the situation in Venezuela in humanitarian terms, they've also made it clear the U.S. has a financial stake in the conflict as well. Here's Bolton again, speaking on Fox News in January.
Venezuela is one of the three countries I called the troika of tyranny. It'll make a big difference to the United States economically if we could have American oil companies really invest in and produce the oil capabilities in Venezuela. It'd be good for the people of Venezuela. It'd be good for the people of the United States. We both have a lot at stake here making this come out the right way.
Alejandro Velasco is an associate professor of history at New York University and author of Barrio Rising, Urban Popular Politics, and the Making of Modern Venezuela. He joins me now to discuss the developments and what could be ahead. Alejandro, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first of all, why did Guaido decide to release this dramatic video? Why this approach?
Well, the situation in Venezuela had been stalemated now for several months since he announced that he was interim president on January 23rd. There have been a series of escalating steps to try to force an outcome. We had the humanitarian attempt to bring humanitarian aid into Venezuela on February 23rd. And really what we'd seen since is very little movement, at least domestically. And so there's a real sense that he needed to shake up the landscape. And there had been some sounds on Twitter chatter and elsewhere that perhaps something was coming today. And so it did catch a lot of people by surprise that yesterday was when things went down.
There have been some folks who are watching this from afar and thinking Venezuela is on the brink of civil war. Do you agree with that estimation, given where we are today?
No. And that's primarily because the government of Maduro continues to exercise significant monopoly over violence. The opposition certainly has significant support on the streets in terms of popular support as well as internationally. But as we saw yesterday, as well in evidence, it still has no control over any sector of the military to speak of. That's not to say that there aren't non-state armed actors that could be involved. And certainly Venezuela is a very violent country in terms of street violence and crime. But a civil war scenario, as we've seen elsewhere in Latin America, does not seem to be in the cards.
Why have Guaido and the opposition been so unsuccessful in their attempts to overthrow Maduro? I mean, Guaido has the support of the United States and at least in speaking of other countries. So what's the holdup here?
Well, I mean, that's the question the opposition has been put to over the last 20 years since they've been trying to oust first Hugo Chavez and then Maduro. I think in part it's a combination of factors. One is an overestimation of the strengths of the opposition domestically and abroad. There's a sense, even going back to the Chavez era, that because Chavismo cannot really be a significant force, that therefore just a little bit it would take to oust them, just a little movement here and there. But since Maduro has become so unpopular, that's less of an issue. And then the question is, well, where does the sources of support of Maduro come from? And it's primarily from the military. And it's in part because the military is so well woven into a broad network of corruption that they have significant amounts at stake in staying in power. So that's really been a significant, you know, drawback for the opposition's efforts.
I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned Chavez. I want to go into the history here because the U.S. does have a history of pushing for regime change in Venezuela. Tell us a little bit about when the United States did try to remove Chavez.
Well, the most direct effort was in April of 2002. There had been a series of escalating street protests around control over the oil industry, as you mentioned in your intro. And that led to a dramatic protest in the center of Caracas, and there was violence that broke out. And then Chavez was ousted, actually. He was out of office for about 72 hours until he was reinstated by way of a counter-mobilization. In the interim, the United States government came very strongly in support of the coup, and at that time, the Bush administration. But ever since, it's been closely aligned with efforts to either destabilize or otherwise disrupt Venezuela's Chavista governments.
Is the U.S. taking a similar role today as they did when Chavez was in power?
Yes, but less successfully.
Well, let's talk about that, because why is it less successful today? Is it because of Maduro's overall power with the military? I mean, does this risk the U.S. saying, okay, at what point do we or should we go to Venezuela and actually take an active role in deposing of Maduro?
I think that the answer to that lies in understanding the motives of the various players in the U.S. government. And so certainly if you think about Trump, his primary interest in Venezuela is not actually Venezuela. His primary interest in Venezuela is winning 2020, which he needs Florida in order to do that. And of course, there's a significant population of Venezuelan expats that have gone to Florida over the last 20 years. But more significantly, there's, as we know, a significant population of Cuban expats. And to the extent that the Obama administration and Cuba being Venezuela's primary partner had opened up relations with Cuba, this is really seen, especially by Marco Rubio, the senator of Florida, as an attempt to stoke up, right, that sense of anti-Cuban government action to bring up people to the voting polls. You know, for John Bolton, it's a different kind of strategy. For him, it's containment of Russia worldwide. For Mike Pence, it's a different motivation. It's about, you know, this personal relationship that he has with Juan Guaido, who's very Catholic, who's very devout, much like in terms of, Christianity, Mike Pence. All of that is to say that the United States actually doesn't really so much care about Venezuela in this stage. And so because it's seeing Venezuela
or the Venezuelans.
Indeed.
Okay.
Right. But insofar as Venezuela is a piece and larger puzzle, it doesn't actually have a lot in terms of concerted strategy in Venezuela. It's just one step along other paths.
So that might explain a little bit about Marco Rubio in particular pushing so hard for regime change in Venezuela. Do they have any options going forward?
The opposition or the United States?
The United States.
Of course. Absolutely. So there was a huge round of sanctions announced earlier this year that really creates significant problems for the oil industry in Venezuela, which, of course, is the primary source of revenue of the government. But there's more sanctions that the United States could announce, and those could be even harsher, that could attack the banking sector in Venezuela and would make it really impossible for Venezuelans to be able to purchase anything, because most things are purchased electronically, not through cash, since there's hyperinflation. And so there's an array of things that the United States could do. Certainly, as the U.S. government has said, that all options are on the table. Intervention remains one of those options. I think it's a least likely scenario, but it's certainly there.
Do we expect Guaido and the opposition to continue demonstrations? I mean, what risk do they run in doing so?
Well, the risks that they run in doing so are less than the risks that they run in not doing so, right? So Guaido in particular needs to show, especially after what happened yesterday and just how much credibility he lost in saying the military is behind us, we can actually do this today, and then nothing happened in terms of military turning over, he needs to be able to continue to show that he can muster people into the streets.
Based on what happened yesterday, it does look like the country's military has continued to support Maduro, although Guaido, as you mentioned, said that he had the support of the military. What's the disconnect here? Does Guaido have any military support whatsoever?
I mean, the saying among Venezuelanists and Venezuelans is that the military is a black box, right? We can't really know what's inside of it until things happen. I think that the disconnect in part is that the stakes for the military, especially those in the higher commands, those who actually command troops, are tied to their survival in a transition regime. And to the extent that Guaido is unable to give assurances to these players that they will not be tried, that they will not suffer the consequences of some of their corruption and human rights violations, I think that really makes it impossible for them to imagine a scenario in which they would be safe in a transition. And so the disconnect is I think, primarily there. Can you provide assurances that we're not going to end up in jail for the rest of our lives? And if you can't do that, then why would we not continue to support the government in power now?
Let's focus a little bit on the humanitarian crisis that continues to unfold in Venezuela. We have seen life in Venezuela, not just inside Caracas, but outside of Caracas. There have been thousands of Venezuelans leaving the country. Tell us what the situation is on the ground today. We've got about a minute left.
Millions of Venezuelans over the last, 3 to 4 years in particular. The situation is dire. Hyperinflation means that people who don't have access to dollars by way of remittances or elsewhere cannot actually buy goods. The sanctions are now hitting the gasoline sector, so people don't have access to gasoline. People leaving, but they do so without any resources. And so what you find is that people are walking hundreds, sometimes thousands of miles to get to uncertain futures. Medicine continues to be dramatically scarce, and the situation only seems to be getting worse.
Alejandro Velasco is an associate professor of history at New York University. Alejandro, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.